Hello, everyone, and welcome back. This is Marcus from Gen Con TV, and we are excited to bring you another classic episode of Fireside with Peter Adkisson, where the founder of Wizards of the Coast himself takes us on a trip through the untold history of Magic the Gathering with special guests from the game's illustrious past. In today's classic episode, Peter and co-host Emma Larkins are joined by Rich Kalis. So without further ado, we'll drop you right into the conversation.
Rich, thank you for being on Fireside.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for inviting me. I'm really excited.
You're excited to be here.
I'm excited. Everyone's excited.
Yeah. Woohoo.
It's been fun to watch.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. So you've watched a couple of the episodes?
Yes, I have. Yes.
It's been kind of like homecoming watching.
Yes.
It's been a great excuse to reach out to people and get together.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes. So if you watch a couple episodes, you know that where we like to start this journey is to kind of talk about, well, who was Rich Kalis back before Magic the Gathering, before Wizards of the Coast? Who were you before then, and how did you become involved in Magic ultimately?
Well, it probably started in college. I was in a gaming group with a couple people, namely Steve Shropshire and Crystal, his wife, who grew up with you in Walla Walla, right?
That's right.
Mm. Yeah. And so in our gaming group, I mean, I went to WSU, and I mean, if there was 3 feet of snow on the ground, I was still tromping through 3 feet of snow to go play on Friday nights. Mm. So across those 4 years, playing with Steve and Crystal.
And I just got to plug you. Yeah. Steve Shropshire, who you're talking about, he was my first GM.
Okay.
So when I first learned to play Dungeons and Dragons, you know, I think like a lot of people, I got the box off the shelf.
Yeah.
This is in 1978. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the box, reading the rules, and after doing all that, like, I have no idea how this game plays.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand how to play D&D ever. And so, but Steve was the first person I went to his campaign and rolled up a character, and I just remember that moment of sitting there at the beginning. I have this character. He says, what? You're sitting in a bar, and this old mountain man walks into the bar, climbs upon one of the tables, and starts yelling about the problems with orcs. All of a sudden, like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah.
Like that moment, right? Long diversion, but I had to give a plug out to Steve.
My first
experience playing.
He's amazing. I mean, we had such a great time, and his wife Crystal was such a great player. And so anyway, but throughout these 4 years, he would talk about Peter and the gaming back in Walla Walla. And so when I left Pullman, I went to Seattle, and I knew that you existed in the Seattle area somewhere out there. But Steve didn't know really how to get a hold of you either. So it was actually through another friend of mine who we were looking at. These game boards actually a bulletin board where you actually put push pins and 3x5 cards.
Yes.
Somebody was looking for new players, and so we happened to connect in and get invited over to this couple's apartment. I think it was in Renton at the time.
Because this is how you found people to play with back in those days. You didn't go to the internet. You went to the local hobby game store.
The what?
And there was an opponent's wanted section, a pinup board with notices and phone numbers.
You can just Google it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So we showed up, and the funny thing is I walked in, I met this guy, Peter, and then his wife, at the time, Kathy. And so I said, so are you Peter Adkisson? Well, yes, I am. Well, I just got done gaming with Steve Shropshire for 4 years, and I've been looking for you. Here's the sword I present to you.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, it was like a quest in a way. So
this is probably around 1986, right?
Yeah.
So because I moved to Seattle in 85, and it was shortly after that because we gamed, the summary of this story is we gamed together for many years before we started Wizards. So we're talking about Wizards of the Coast growing out of Peter Adkisson's old gaming group.
Yep, definitely.
This is the old gamer, one of the old gamers in that old gaming group, right?
And it was just, I mean, I hate to use the term, but it was a magical time. I mean,
it was a magical time.
It was a magical time.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Makes sense.
No, I'm just going from Steve Shropshire's campaign and then shifting in to play with you and this crowd of such amazingly creative people and how the campaigns were actually connected together through the portal system. It was a very, the evolution of it was pretty amazing. And I also come to find out that one of the guys who I actually had been an RA to ended up being Steve Connard, who, when I
was the first guest on our show, by the way,
yeah,
first
I walked in because he was at the apartment, and I was like, "Why do you look so familiar?" He's like, "You look familiar too." And then we found out that we had actually had, you know, had been around each other at WCU. Anyway, so yeah, so then fast forward. 4 years, I guess.
After 4 years, gaming together, making all sorts of great stories.
Causing lots of trouble.
Lots of
killing
trouble,
lots of things. Killing. Being killed many times by you.
Yes.
yes. All with love, I'm sure. then it was at that one night. I think it was a Monday night? Friday night. Monday night or Friday night. Anyway, you said, hey, everybody, I want everyone come to my apartment at this time. I have something I want to talk about. And it was that night that you said, I want to start a company, and we're going to make games, and we're going to
That was
show...
in May of 1990.
Mm. Was it May?
May of 1990.
Yeah.
On a Monday or a Friday.
Monday or Friday.
Yeah. And everyone, what was the reaction to that? So you gave this proclaimment.
Yes.
So everyone like, yay, you're like,
That's a good question for you.
So if you never had context with this man... He's probably, he's so amazingly enthusiastic and engaging and a leader and so intelligent and smart. But, you know, it's like, for me, it was like, heck yeah. I mean, if anyone's going to make it happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was excited.
And I was 29. Mm-hmm. Good thing I wasn't older. I hadn't figured out how to be
like,
naive
oh, we,
and yeah. dumb.
20 years later, oh, we don't want to start a company.
Yeah. Never do that now.
But no, we were all, it was pretty exciting. And we were like, yeah, let's do it. What do we have to lose?
Yeah.
I mean, we're all working generally and making, you know, starting money. And so then we started off. And it was funny because one of the quotes that's even been used that I told people is that, oh, yeah, we were throwing around VP positions like candy. You know, you be the VP of this and you be a VP of this. You be but we were leveraging off of different people's sort of strengths. And because some people had, you know, print production background and some people had marketing background. And some people,
So what did we, so that happened. So what did you do? What did you do in the beginning?
What was I VP of? Well, it kind of got moved around a little bit, but so the first thing that I said is that, you know, Peter, my background is in graphic design. And I said, well, let me do the logo.
Okay.
Cue. Well, yes, I've learned I'm supposed to give cues for when we want to show a visual. So we actually have the very first Wizard of the Coast logo.
Yes.
Is it up? Yep.
Yeah.
Awesome. That Rich designed.
Yeah.
And by the way, it is still my favorite Wizard of the Coast logo of all time because it's so moody. It's this castle.
Moody.
It's like, gamery.
It's like a wizard castle by the coast.
Yeah. Which was a faction in your campaign, which I think people should know too.
Actually, it was in Bruce's campaign.
Oh, was it Bruce's?
Yes, but yeah. Mm. It was the Wizards of the Coast was a wizard's guild in another D&D campaign that we played in. Mm-hmm. And it was, we always feared the Wizards of the Coast. If a Wizard of the Coast showed up in a fight, we would just pretty much put down our arms and walk away because we were so terrified of them. And so when we had the idea of starting a company, I think it was either Daryl or Terry who said, we should call a company Wizards of the Coast. And we're all like, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. And that was it. It was like, it took 2 minutes to decide the name of the company.
Yeah.
But
it
took you much longer than that, probably 20 minutes or a half hour.
35 to be exact.
35
No, it was, you know, I had played enough. I had played since the box days, 1978 or so. And so I just wanted the logo to, I don't know. I mean, we obviously couldn't do a full color logo because we had no money in those days. We had to do something simple.
We weren't allowed to.
Although the design did pose its own challenges later on. But then it evolved. It actually went through a number of renditions to the current logo.
Yes. So. And no offense, obviously, even though yours was my favorite, I really loved the Kim's version of the logo that she did years
Kim
later.
Kim Baruffi designed the rectangular one. And then after that, she worked with a typography specialist in Seattle.
Designed the...
The arced one, actually, which was when we did the retail venture.
Right, right.
Yep.
So let's jump forward to the Gamma Trade Show in 1991. I think this was like...
I think it was... it must have been 1991.
Yes, had to have been 91 because 90 was the year we started the company. 92, we came out with Primal Order. So it was well before we came out.
Yeah, so February.
February,
I think, is when the Gamma shows up.
Yep.
So the other thing that I was told by Peter that why he sent me to Gamma is because I was, you know, passively good looking. And that's even in an article.
Is that a hostile work environment thing to tell an employee? I'm sending you to the trade show because you're awfully cute.
Yeah, actually, I read that for the first time in an article. I was like, what? Okay. But anyway, so
what the Gamma Trade Show is, yeah, first of all, so this is in the world of tabletop games and role-playing games and this whole industry, still now, mm-hmm. There's one trade show that exists in our industry, and it's called the Gamma Trade Show, or GTS. Gamma stands for the Game Manufacturers Association, but it's also for distributors and retailers and even convention operators. Mm. So I had learned, we had been working on our first products, the Primal Order, et cetera, for about a year. And we were finally coming around to the idea, like, okay, we're going to finish this game product within our lifetimes, apparently. How do we sell it?
Yeah.
And I had no idea how to sell a game. Mm. And so, well, I know where to buy games at retailers. So I went to a retailer and asked them, how did you buy this?
Where did it come from?
It's a fair question.
Like, how did you buy this? Who did you buy it from? And I started asking questions basically about how the industry worked. This retailer said, you really need to go to the Gamma Trade Show.
Absolutely.
And like, and you will network and learn all about distribution and retail and all that stuff like that. And I said, okay, that sounds, and I was just, I know I don't come across as a very introverted person, but for some reason the idea of going there just terrified me. And I said, I thought of you as more outgoing, better at networking, going up and talking to strangers, like you're really friendly, affable person, you know. And so I asked Rich to go, and it was kind of a scaredy cat thing of me to do.
Threw me to the gamer wolves.
I threw you to the gamer wolves and the white wolves, apparently.
And the white wolves, yeah. So and it was funny. I think I was, as we were leading up to this interview, I was like thinking about what was my sort of my mindset. And I think I was just sort of like, what do I have? Again, what do I have to lose? Let's just go talk to people.
Yeah.
You know?
Go to Vegas.
Go to Vegas. Yeah, I was in Vegas, all of all places.
Right, right,
actually,
right.
It's still in Vegas, right?
It's
every year.
It's in Reno now.
It's in Reno now. Yeah.
A lot cheaper.
It has moved a couple times. There was a period where it was in Vegas, and then it moved and went to a couple other places, Miami once even, and then came back to Vegas. It was there at Vegas for a number of years, and now it's at Reno. Yeah. Who knows? So, I think everybody's thinking it's going to go back to Vegas eventually. Who knows?
So went to Gamma, signed up for a few sort of presentations, and it actually was at this one luncheon that I just happened to go to. I was in line and, you know, knew nobody, so I wasn't really talking to anybody. But as I was in line...
You weren't talking to people
already. Well, I was. Sorry. Yeah. Hey, I ended up doing okay. So in front of me was this woman, and I heard her talking with some of her compatriots, and I heard her comment that work that they were doing, and I think that they mentioned Vampire. Mm-hmm. And so I come to realize that it was with White Wolf, which was a very established gaming company. And
it had just become established. Yeah. It had been around for a while, but with Vampire the Masquerade came out in 1991.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
It had been out before that.
So I think, who knows, somebody out there is checking my Google. Somebody get Google Foo. Mm. But I think that it was like the hot new thing in the industry.
And prior to that was White Wolf Magazine.
White Wolf Magazine had been around.
Yeah. Yes. So anyway, I met this woman, Lisa Stevens.
Yes.
And it's funny to hear Lisa talk about the meeting and then have my frame of reference because... Anyway, Lisa was amazing, and we hit it off immediately, and we actually spent a lot of the weekend sort of, you know, talking throughout and going to different things, and we you know, I remember there was drinking and dancing, but we also did you know, some conversation
there
about
work.
Games. So there was work.
Yeah.
But it just, you know, we just started talking, and I sort of talked about some of our ideas, and I did, Lisa made the comment later. She's like, you know, Rich probably shouldn't have told me as much as he already did, but anyway. So we had this amazing weekend getting to know Lisa and some of the guys from White Wolf, and so when I came back with all this information, I basically did an information dump with Peter, and kind of connected you and Lisa to start talking. Because at a certain point, it's like I couldn't be the main conduit. And,
Yeah, and it's and by the way, we had Lisa on the show, so we got to hear the story from her. And it's pretty consistent, yeah.
Oh, really?
No, and Lisa, and that led to, well, first of all, the immediate need that we had, which was, as a company, how do we sell products?
Distribution.
How do we price products? Who are the distributors? What are their terms? You know, how to, you know... get a US, you know, a product codes.
Right.
And,
yeah.
Yep.
You know, ISBN number. These are all the basics of how to publish a product. Mm. Lisa was a fount of information for us and very
huge
open with this. And then, but of course, one thing led to another, and she decided to move to Seattle. She had a falling out with her colleagues at White Wolf, and she came up and joined Wizards of the Coast. Mm.
And was it the first official hire? Because usually,
she was, Lisa Stevens was the first full-time paid employee.
Right.
That's right.
Because mm-hmm. I once said that she was our first employee, and Beverly, like, oh no, she wasn't the first employee. She was just the first full-time
mm-hmm.
paid employee.
Yeah. So we had other employees, but she was the first full-time.
Yeah. Mm. She was first time. So yeah, but we already had, Beverly was of course already working with us.
Right.
Jay Hayes, Kathleen, of course.
Right. Yeah.
So.
But it made a huge difference. So yeah. So.
Right.
And then.
So Lisa came to Seattle. Yes.
Yeah.
That was fun. So now, did you, when you came back from Gamma, mm-hmm. it wasn't too long. At what point did you kind of have to ease off of working at Wizards because your day job?
I mean, so this wasn't your full-time thing?
No.
Okay.
So I actually worked at a silkscreen company, and as the years kind of went on, my responsibility was growing there, and I remember it distinctly. I was in my office that I shared with sort of a professional. That's a weird phrase.
A colleague
who we were peers, but she and my boss actually came in and they closed the door and said, "We need to talk to you about your performance because this startup company, which we've been being flexible with you, it's really taking a lot of your time and it's really kind of you are jeopardizing what we need you to do. And so we need you to make a decision, either transition out or refocus here." And that was in 93. No, I'm sorry, 92, because it was just when Magic was getting going and it was under development, and you were working with Richard. And I think that it was even at the point that the name, no, actually, I don't think the name had changed from Mana Clash into Magic yet. So, but I had to pull back and kind of focus on my full time because I had to pay rent and, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I actually
even
think of this time, I was living with you and Kathleen.
Yes.
So I still got the exposure to it, but I wasn't.
But at some point, we had to like, okay, we gotta quit giving you work. But I think it was about the time Lisa came to Seattle, or I don't know if it was before or after.
Actually, that happened before she came. Before that, and it actually was also too. I forgot that time wise, she moved out to Seattle when I was living with you and Kathleen. But it was also at the time that I was coming out.
Yes.
I was going through like major personal transitions, but all good.
Yes.
Because I remember that time. Because it was actually Kathleen was the first person, as well along with Barb Hines, who thought that I might be not as straight as I assumed. I think it had something to do with the number of shoes I had. But it was in that time that I was kind of, and I will say that you and Kathleen being my roommate, and then also to the corporate culture that sort of evolved around Wizards of the Coast was one of the reasons why I think that that transitional process was not as difficult as many other people may have gone through.
Right.
Because Wizards was a very sort of culturally diverse company. I mean, very culturally diverse. And so really that wasn't much easier process. But anyway, but I had to step back.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Thank you for for being comfortable mentioning that.
Oh yeah.
It was.
It's like my eyes are hazel. Oh, I'm gay.
But it was part of, but the whole company grew in that moment to some extent too, because we were all, you know, I was a guy from Idaho. I was raised in a very conservative farming community. So was Steve, you know. It was part of the process of us all growing up and becoming professionals, getting out of school
and finding
jobs and starting companies and our game group, and like, oh, and Rich is gay. Okay. You know, like, okay, we all gotta figure out what that means. And I'm glad you looked back and found that we were supportive and in our naivety. And
But I think, well, the thing is that through those years at gaming and then starting this company, it really forged so many different aspects of our friendship that I think that made it comfortable that when I did, you know, become more honest with that, it was just another facet to our friendship, both you and Steve and, you know, everybody else that was sort of involved in that thing. So, but yeah, so with the business, I actually did have to step back from Wizards and focus on my other career for a while.
I'm interested. And then what happened next?
I thought you were going to start a question. So I think that it was about 3 years later before you were able 95. To really come back. Yeah. So it was nice. So this is, I guess, well, maybe closer to 4 years then, because Lisa came out in 1991. Just to go through the timeline a little bit, 1992, Wizards came out with our first product with Primal Order. 1993, we came out with Magic the Gathering. And so you really did miss all the launch of Magic the Gathering. I mean, you got vicariously through us, you know, because we were still friends.
Right.
So take us up to when you finally were able to be hired, become part of the full-time team. Was in 95, right?
It was 95. I was with somebody at that time, living in Federal Way, and I just got to the point where I wanted to do something different. And so I gave my notice at the silkscreen company I was working at, and I made the decision that I was gonna step away and do graphic design full-time as well as software consulting.
And you made that decision independent of any sort of offer from Wizards.
Yes.
Was the life choice.
Yeah. It was a week later that Kathleen heard through the vine that I was stepping away, and Kathleen's like, by the way, why did she come back to us? And I was like, oh. And I said, well, what does that look like? And she said, well, we have this marketing team, and there's a lot of design work that is done in it. And I think that they had a designer part-time. And so I know that in talking with you and the three of us talking, it was like, here's what we can do for you. And I was like, you know what? I mean, here, work by myself, working with design clients and working by myself, or go back and work with my friends. Yeah, not even, it was like, okay, great. Yeah. Hey, I appreciate that. Sure, let's get back together. Mm. So, yeah.
So, you came into Wizards. What was your first job?
First job. So, I was a graphic designer for the marketing department. Mm. I shouldn't say it's funny. They had a number of newsletters that they were doing. I think it was like 4 external and 2 internal, something like that. But addressing different aspects of the business, distribution, sales, the internal one, there was a couple different ones. That one was about, I think, specifically about what was going on in Magic, and the other one was more company, what's going on in the company.
Mm. Well, a shareholder newsletter, I think.
That was one of them.
Yeah.
So I started in the marketing department. Two of the people that I worked with quite a bit when I was there was Rias Hall, who I know you had on the show.
We had a great time with Rias.
Love Rias.
Yes.
Also James Ernest.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We had James's wife, Carol Monahan, was on the show. Yeah.
Love Carol. Yeah. And so I got sort of dropped into this group. And although all my other, you know, friends from the gamer days are still there, it was nice to sort of be in a group that I really didn't know from prior. And so I sort of got back into the Wizards groove with this team in the marketing department for a while.
For a while. Yep. Until.
Until.
So let me set the stage a little bit. So by the fall of 1995, so a year before that, nearly a year before that, in the fall, winter of 94, the company went through the first sort of big test of the company post the launch of Magic, which was the Fallen Empires debacle, which we've talked about from a number of different angles in this show.
Right.
Where the bubble burst, if you will. Mm. And in the wake of that, we as a company responded by repositioning the branding of Magic the Gathering, what Magic the Gathering stood for, from being a collectible, trading, and casual play to a competitive sport. And it's great because the strategy worked. And Magic found new life under this positioning. Mm-hmm. And
so in that time, the creative director was working on trying to centralize the art department because there were a few sort of satellite designers in the company. And so she really centralized the art department. I joined the art department. And it wasn't long after that that I think it was you that came and said, or no, maybe it was a current creative director. But anyway, so there was a need for the OP, the organized play, that they wanted somebody to sort of take that and be the art director for the organized play. And so that was actually my first big sort of, you know, getting to work directly on Magic as the organized play division really was becoming in existence with Karin Krisnick and Rick Ahrens and Scaff Elias and Susan Scheid. Yeah, and so we got together and I put in my ideas and they had their ideas. And Rick was very much about, I want to make this sort of like a, make it feel like a sport. And so I took references from sort of like national soccer teams and how graphic they were.
Yeah.
Be using a lot of block colors, a lot of striping, some textures, but not. I wanted it to feel distinctly different from Magic because Magic, if the cards, is very textural and very, you know, it just has a lot of sort of visual activity to it. So I wanted the organized play to be a little bit more some calm space and more sort of sports graphics back then, I should say.
So what were these assets used for? So you're designing all these assets for the organized play, and where did they appear?
Banners, video screens, merchandise. They had a lot of OP specific Magic the Gathering merchandise.
The Duelist sideboard, maybe.
Yep,
Duelist was a newsletter that we had
actually one of the newsletters I did.
Yes, those newsletters
for organized play specifically.
Okay,
right. Yeah.
There was a big push on newsletters
before,
the internet kind of made all that obsolete.
Newsletter? Is this like a paper thing?
Yeah, it was a paper thing.
It was funny. They did scope back and consolidated, so it wasn't as newsletter heavy after like the first couple months I was there. I don't know if it was my decision, but anyway. So organized play, I mean, it just was this amazing time where as Rick was rolling out this concept of this is the smart person's game to play, and people ate it up. I mean, it was pretty lightning striking.
I feel like the Wizards organized play program that we did in that era of 1995, 96, 97 was really the progenitor of esports.
Yeah, I was going to ask, was there anything before, did other games really have organized play before that as much?
Before Magic the Gathering, you're not going to find much in the way of organized play of any game that's owned by a company. You would find organized play for things like chess.
Right, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Or bridge, certainly. Mm-hmm. And but because those games weren't owned by a company, there was no company that had the vested interest in financially supporting the organized play to a big deal. Where us, because we owned the trademarks for Magic the Gathering, any money that we put into things like prize packages and stuff like that, we would recoup that money. And so we were in the position to do sort of the first organized play that's of a company owned game. In the tabletop sphere on a big scale.
Yeah. Right? Intellectual combat. I mean, it really is.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When people would say, well, what's Magic like? And my analogy is it's sort of like chess crossed with bridge crossed with steroids. Because the concept just worked.
So you got to go in and design a lot of what would emerge as the look of Magic and within the competitive environment. Like what it would look like when you would go to a tournament and you would see banners on the wall. We don't think of these things very tangibly because they're not the cards themselves and so on, right? But there is this very subtle influence on how you feel about where you're at based on all the graphics you see that surround you. Mm-hmm. And also not just at the events, although that's a big part of it, the type of correspondence that goes out relating to these events, and the type of advertisements that we were running about the events and coverage by ESPN. When I remember the Pro Tour got put on ESPN. That was awesome. And so you got to pioneer a lot of that.
It's evolved from where I started.
Of course. Just like the logo.
And it was a great team. I mean, we butted heads, but we also, I feel, really came up with something exceptional. So I was really proud of that time frame.
It was great. Well, yeah. And it's, yeah, I think we're really proud that, you know, of the time we spent at Wizards, you know, in so many ways.
It's really good. As I talk about it, I remember more stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So that was not the apogee of your career at Wizards of the Coast. You went,
there's more.
There's more. You went on and did other things.
Why do I feel tired?
Even
no.
Bigger than that.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, it was quite the roller coaster ride.
Yeah.
So at the time when I took over as art director for organized play, the current creative director and the head of production sort of had a falling out, and so the creative director decided to move on to other things.
Now, and that person was responsible for all art and graphics throughout all of Wizards of the Coast.
She has centralized everything under, and I think at that time the department was about 12 to 13 people. But her decision to leave, which I totally respected, but it left this void of the lead. There was no leader in our team. And so, and we went, I think it was like we went 7 to 9 months without a creative director. And for morale was just really rough.
It was shit.
It really was. I mean, I'm sitting there. So I was in this really weird space because I could totally feel for the predicament that the team was in and the designers and the art directors. At the same time, too, here I was one of the charter members of a company. So I was in this sort of like dual role. And it was really hard to watch. And I think all told across those 7 to 9 months, I think we interviewed like 21 different creative directors to find the role of somebody who would do it. And it was just, and the morale was getting
worse. But we wanted to do it.
Yeah, and the morale was just getting worse and worse. And so, I mean, you know.
We were really wrestling with it. And let's put this in time frame. Vince was there now by this time, right?
Yes, yeah, he was there.
And so this had to have been at least 1997 or later. The year we bought TSR was 97.
So this was early 97 then. Yeah, it was early 97. Yeah, I know why it's early 97 now in my mind. And I'll explain in a second. So anyway, I knew that I always had Peter's ear, and I knew that we would chat from time to time, but I also don't like to... He had enough on his mind. But just got to the point where I'm like, okay, this is ridiculous. So I walked into Peter's office one day. I said, hey, can we talk? And he's like, yeah, sure, of course. And I said, I don't necessarily have the creative chops background, but I definitely have managed people before, both at these other couple of companies. I said, morale is really bad. I said, I want to put my name in for the creative director position. And so this is one of those surprising moments I had with Peter. Peter looks at me, he's like, I was wondering when you're going to toss your hat.
Oh, my
God. I was like, damn you, Peter Atkinson. So yeah, so we had an interview with Vince and Peter and Sue McNabb was there, I think at that time. And
head of HR.
Head of HR. Years, yeah. And so, yeah, so I got the job, which, woo-hoo, yay! But it poses challenges, you know, like I said, morale was awful. Here I was somebody who was already a charter member of the company. Here I am coming in, not as much of a creative background or creative history as what the prior art director had. But I knew what I needed to do. So then I started stepping in. I think that, and I can't remember, I think that Jeremy Cranford took over as art director for organized play. I believe. I cannot remember for sure. Anyway. So really one of my top priorities that was a major conversation at that time was Magic the Gathering artist contracts. At the time, Sue Ann Harkey was the art director. And so we've been working a lot with Sue Ann and a number of other people. Kim Francisco, I think Jane Ulander was in on that conversation. We were really trying to restructure how the artist contracts were so that there was some equanimity between the artists and the company, because there was definitely some
challenges
that we needed to repair. So that was one of the things actually I felt really happy about. It was one of the first things that we sort of tackled and evolved that relationship better. And then
it's good to have an early win when you take on a new job.
Yeah.
And I mean, there are other challenges, and I definitely had my pitfalls too, that I did not make the best decisions, but it was only like about a month or two later that Peter came to me and said, oh, by the way, we're buying TSR.
Surprise!
And, And so then Peter, I was, I think, one of the early people that Peter said, okay, I need you to go out to TSR in Lake Geneva, and I want you to interview the whole art team.
Yeah, for those who don't know, TSR was the name of the company that owned Dungeons & Dragons and Gen Con. And before we bought them in 1997.
And these are, this was a team that whose products since 1978 had influenced me and this guy and all our friends. Yeah. And so when you go to Lake Geneva and you're seeing, you know, artists like Jeff Easley and Tony Sudlow and R.K. Poe and all these amazing artists and then art directors and designers, it was definitely sort of a, you know, I need to reality check myself. And so it was definitely, after taking over as creative director for a 13-person team, when we went through the process of acquiring TSR and then moving everybody out, the creative team jumped to 50 to 55 people.
Wow. Right.
And, yeah. So that was interesting.
Huge. Is there something more you want to say on that?
Well, I was going to say, because of that, though, I knew that I had to look at figuring out how to restructure the team so that, I mean, because obviously you can't have like 30 direct reports. So one of the things that I feel was a good move, actually two really good moves, as online was sort of becoming such, now coming to the forefront, and Wizards was very much the forefront of having a website and this new internet thing, bringing in John Shindahedi from Dallas to be the online art director. And then almost at the same time, I hired in Ron Spears to sort of head up the artists and illustrators group. He's a gentleman and art director that I worked with at my prior company and was amazing. And so working with a lot of the illustrators that we got in from TSR, because a lot of those guys and ladies, guys, I think mostly guys, really took a lot of their creativity from the TSR side of it and actually worked crossways with the Magic creative team. And so I think it just took Magic.
Well, we got Don Mirren.
And Don Mirren from the art direction side. Mm. Yeah. Don Mirren, who was responsible for all the redesign for 3.0 and those amazing core rulebook sets with that. The actual sculptural art that she had commissioned and worked with for the covers. Anyway,
so let's go back. I'm going to take us back a little bit more towards Magic again. Okay. So we've kind of gone through a really cool narrative arc. Now you are king of king art and graphics design by the time, the time before the end of our time at Wizards of the Coast. Along the way, what do you remember? You told me about some interesting travel stories that you had. You got to travel for the company to some interesting places.
Yeah.
Anything along there you want to tell us about? Or any stories along our trip?
So one of the things that during my years as creative director, it had started before, is that because Magic had become really this global game, and I think at that time it was translated into 14 different languages. I think it's now up to like 20 plus.
Mm. I have no idea.
Yeah, but the thing that was really sort of paramount when during that period is that trying to get some more international representation from the illustrators. One of our big artists that we got was Paolo. Can't remember Paolo's last name, from Italy.
Oh yeah.
He's Italian treasure painter. Yeah. And so we had reached out to him, and he had started doing some cards because we wanted to be reflective of the fact that this wasn't just a US-based game. This is an international game now. And so I had the opportunity as a creative director to go and do portfolio reviews at some of these comic and art festivals. And so Lucca, Italy, was a big one. It's just
and that show is amazing. But Lucca was a big show back then in the 90s, and now it's just crazy. It's it's still one of,
and it's a tiny little town.
I know.
They just take it over.
You see a massive number. It's like as big as Gen Con, maybe bigger. I don't know. It's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was one of the trips I got to go on and had a great time and hung out a lot with the Italian office, the Wizards Italian office, as well as Paolo himself. And so one thing that I just thought was funny, this little anecdotal conversation. So we were at dinner and they said, well, what sort of food do you like, Rich? I said, well, I actually like Italian food. And they're like, Italian food? You have Italian food in the U.S.?
Oh.
Well, yes, actually, we do have Italian food in the U.S. But, yeah, so it's just funny how...
Look at a Beppo.
They're like,
So, no, the trip like that, and then
it's
also...
okay, they're not a sponsor. You can make fun of them if you want to.
No, and then I went had an opportunity to go to Yokohama to the World Championships. And while at the World Championships, we did portfolio reviews for a lot of Japanese artists and... So, but it's just, I mean, to have that opportunity to sort of gather these artists and then, you know, bring it back and then basically turn it over to the, you know, the senior art director of Magic and just say, well, I like this one and this one and this one, but it's your decision. So, yeah.
Well, that really shows. I mean, one of the things I've been talking with a lot of people about Magic over the last couple of days, and it, like, care being given to the mechanics, to people who care about playing the game, who care about collecting it, and the art. And that's something, I mean, something that keeps me coming back, you know, playing 28 years ago, like, coming back to the present time, just, like, the art is really what makes it stand out as
well,
a game,
and
the
history
of the art.
I think I've told this story before. Probably every story I have I've told before several times. But, you know, that's what the wonderful thing about getting old is you can just start doing the same stories over and over. And everybody has to pretend. Anyway, but I like the idea. Magic, the art was so important for Magic. And I remember talking about how Magic, when it first came out, there was a short period before, after it came out, but before everybody knew who what it was, where we were doing the hard sell. We were going to conventions, and we were demoing Magic and showing it. People would go by, never heard of it before. The thing will always draw people in was the art.
Yes.
People would look down, they would see all this color art, fantasy art.
Yeah.
Kind of cool and edgy for the time.
Yeah.
You know, covering the table and going, well, what is that, right?
Yeah.
And it, in of course, Magic the Gathering has now, after... 25 years, 26 years? Matt, 26 years of making amazing color art.
Yeah, it set the bar. I mean, it really did set the bar.
Yeah.
I look at a lot of the games that I play, even currently, and I think about the bar that Magic kind of set, because other game companies, when Magic sort of became that sort of success, I think it just sort of elevated people's awareness that, hey, we can't just throw my uncle's illustration on this product. It's got to be something that, you know, is representative of the level of complexity and dynamic and enjoyment of the game itself. There had to be sort of this, that sort of matching up of quality of art as well.
That's great. It's a wonderful thing. Okay, so you travel around, you saw some portfolio. What did you think of Magic as a game? Did you like playing Magic?
Oh, I love playing Magic.
Okay.
I love playing Magic. Yeah. No, I think I was even sharing a story that, so I'd go to some pre-release tournaments.
Right.
And it was called gunslinging. Have people talked about gunslinging?
Yes, we used to
I
don't know, have you ever heard that term?
I haven't heard
of it. So evidently that term has fallen out of vogue. Back in the early days of Wizards of the Coast, when we would go on to conventions and play Magic with the general public, especially if it was somebody like Richard was with us, or anybody from R&D, you know, if none of those people, then me, you know, third choice.
I was like fourth or fifth.
Or an artist, fourth, fifth choice, right?
Yeah.
But we'd sit at a table and just play Magic with anybody. It was called Gunsling. People would come up and play Magic with us.
Yeah.
And it was before, I mean, because it's such a mature game now, there are sets that sort of fade out, that are not like current sets. I don't know all the rules. But I still have my deck that I would gunsling with. It's a blue deck, and it was really mean and hateful.
Control deck.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, geez.
So I was at this one pre-release. I think it was in Hawaii, and it was the release.
That's a tough gig.
That's a tough gig, I know, yeah. So I was playing this kid, younger kid, and he, you know, he was putting every round, he put out a mana. I do my thing. I was doing a little bit of damage to him left and right, put on another mana. And it was when they had this really amazing...
What, he had no creatures?
He had a few creatures, but then I could tell that he was building up to something.
Right.
So 9 mana, tap, 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 Tika's Dragon. It was his artifact dragon. Boom! And he was so proud of that Tika's Dragon, and the next round I controlled magic and I killed him. And so I did. Felt bad.
Yeah.
I felt bad. Sorry. I felt bad. But...
The whole idea. I mean, you know, I have to admit, I never really liked the idea of like, let the customer win.
To
me, that just doesn't feel.
No, because
like...
he went home and he would go home and tell that story. Oh my God, I was playing this guy.
Yeah.
I think he was from R&D. Don't even know who he was. But Gunsling was a lot of fun, and I still play from time to time. Although now what it is that I have friends who are like teachers in high school or who they say, oh, can you come talk to my class that plays Magic? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And so I go, and I'm so out of context, though. I don't have any of the current cards.
Yeah.
Or if I pull out a white deck and I like put down an Alpha Sarah Angel and it's not in a sleeve or anything and people freak out about that.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a piece of paper, guys. It's just a piece of paper. But anyway. So yes, I did like playing.
Mm.
That was a long answer.
No, that's okay. Mm. So looking back,
yep.
Over here we are in 2019. We've known each other 34 years, something like that.
Since 1986.
Yeah.
So what's that?
Math.
80?
14 and 90. Yeah, 35 years.
35 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
You look the same.
You look good, too. It's a good thing we're still young.
Right.
Those years, you know, being a part of Wizards in the 90s, what do you look back, what do you think? Like, how do you reflect on it?
Hmm.
Well, first of all, having this opportunity, it brings back like that. I mean, there's definitely that nostalgia and excitement.
Hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I started a company with my friends and it was successful.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so that was a big part of it. And so to be able to kind of go back and know that, you know, and so it's great. It's awesome. Hey, yeah. And you know what? There's nothing. So another thing, there's nothing like being when I was out and about and traveling. It was after Pokemon had been released in North America and the Wizards was responsible for that. Seeing a kid playing on his Pokemon, and I'd walk up to this mom, we were on a pool deck on the top of some hotel, and I said, oh, I see your son likes Pokemon. Oh, yeah, do you mind if I give him something? No, not at all. So I actually had a Pokemon booster pack and handing that to him. Those types of moments that I had the opportunity to do that, and the kid was just like, oh, my God. And it was when Pokemon, I mean, like when people were selling their sneakers to get Pokemon.
Right. Mm. Right.
So, I mean...
Yeah, there's just those moments.
Yeah, and it's fun. I mean, it totally keeps me the kid in me.
What do you think? I mean, you know, thinking back on our friendships, you know, mm-hmm. what we went through as a circle of friends, you know, starting a company together. What do you think about that aspect of it? What do you?
Well, I think we had chatted about it. It was actually there was times where it was tough.
Mm.
When we went from gaming together for 4 years, which was amazing role-playing, from that point, when we started the company, we stopped gaming.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
We stopped gaming. We didn't play another... We played a little bit in other people's campaigns, but it really kind of... All of that creative energy got really more funneled towards the company than it did to the gaming, which I actually do think, although it was hard and... Those days, I know we missed those days, but I think it's actually one of the reasons why the company succeeded. So, because there was a lot of energy and thought and creativity in those campaigns and how that all tied together. And I think that because those campaigns were tied together, I think that actually helped us succeed in the fact that here we are putting all our creative energy into a company and those connections still existed, but it's just in a different sort of evolution.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it was, we grew up, you know.
Yeah, it happened.
we grew up. And now a lot of us are back gaming a lot more.
Right, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Every Monday night.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, the 90s. I think back of the 90s. It's like, you know, 1990 is the year I stopped gaming. And then 1999 is I started again. Basically, I mean, like, it was just nonstop work.
You did a great job.
Oh, well, I wasn't angling for a...
I know you weren't, but I'm going to say it anyway. Yeah.
Why? Well, thank you.
I mean, were we perfect? Oh, hell no.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I think we look back, and for me, I try not to live with those regrets. I mean, I recognize the sort of the negative aspect of thinking about things you could have, and I don't spend much energy on that. But you do, you know, you do think, you know, you can't help it. You know?
Right.
It's like, oh man, I screwed up, you know, that, and I screwed up that. Mm. And, you know, you
like even like 20 years ago, right?
You're... Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
30 years ago, almost, yeah. You know. I, yeah. Yeah,
a couple hours ago.
I front-loaded a lot of those mistakes, you know. Most of them in the early, a lot of things in the early 90s, you know. As we got better and better at things, we became less, at least we weren't making sort of the dumb mistakes as often, you know, the naive mistakes.
Now I just make other dumb mistakes.
Yeah. Well, and I remember you were, when you told the story about throwing your hat in the ring for the creative director position, I remember at the time you apologizing in a way for doing it because you had seen us wrestle so much with nepotism at the company.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, the challenges that you face when you hire friends. And I think that you were always really... because you kind of were out since you were away from the company for like 3 years during kind of when we were making a lot of those challenges, having a lot of those challenges, you were sensitive to it. And that was a big part of what we all had to think about in those days. Where I eventually landed was, you know, you don't ever want to hire someone because they're your friend, but you don't want to not hire someone because they're your friend.
Right, right.
That was like always just ignore that fact, right? Hire the right person for the right job, irrespective of whether you're friendly or not.
I have a number of different phrases that I've used throughout my career, and one that a lot of my staff did not like, but I would use it. I would say, you know what? It's not show friends, it's show business. And it, I mean, that's a really cold way to do it, but you know, at a certain point, you know, the business decisions you make within your team affect the whole company. And so if I make a poor business decision based on show friends, then all it's going to do is it's just going to potentially harm the whole company. Mm-hmm. And, you know. Yep.
So let's, we're almost out of time. Take us, one thing I like to do as we kind of wrap up these shows is, like, so whatever happened to Rich Kalis? Where did he go from there? What did he do after that?
It's your grand adventure.
My grand adventure. It's been pretty grand. I've So in 1999, as the creative director, I was, two things were happening. I was actually working on the cover design for the prospectus that we might consider going through an IPO, while at the same time, I knew that conversations with Hasbro were happening. Because it was either we're going to go public or we're going to get bought out by Hasbro. And so I was sort of like, I was sort of having to do both things. But eventually, we did the Hasbro purchase.
Right.
And then in 2000, the very beginning of 2000, is when I made the decision I wanted to kind of step away from the company. At that time, I was overseeing a 55-person creative team, and it's not easy. Great team, but it definitely had its challenges. So I left the company in 2000. I traveled for about about 3 or 4 months, and then ended up buying a 45-acre horse ranch out in Ravensdale, as you do, Ravensdale, Washington. I wanted some more elbow room.
That's near Seattle.
Yeah, 45 minutes southeast of Seattle.
Yeah, yeah,
anyway, near Seattle. So the funny thing is that I bought the ranch in March, and then literally in June, Wanda Gregory, who is the director of online media at Wizards of the Coast, reached out to me and said, hey, so Hasbro's looking for someone to sort of be the consulting creative director for the relaunch of Hasbro.com. Are you interested? yes. So conversations with the current creative director at Wizards, which was John Shindahedi at that time. But then, it worked out that I was going to be the one to do it. So then I started working with Hasbro, did that for six and a half years. And then went through a number of different personal changes, stepped away.
Would you go from gay to straight this time?
There.
We're friends.
He's funny that way, isn't he?
Yeah.
So no, but I mean, let's see. Lost both my parents within a year, ended a 7-year relationship. And so I just needed to make a change. Closed down that company, And then fast forward a few years, I'm with my current husband, George Delmar, who I've been together with now for 11 years. Mm. We have these 45 acres. At one point, we went to list it for sale, but decided not to sell it. And then since 2012, we've actually developed it into one of the premier wedding and event venues in Seattle.
Nice.
It's,
yes.
It's called Rain Fire Ranch, like Rains
Rain
of a Horse.
Like horse.
Oh,
R-E-
I love it.
R-E-I-N, Rain Fire Ranch.
Yeah.
And yeah, and so, and we actually just did a big Wizards of the Coast sort of reunion event there a month ago. Yeah,
yeah.
A few weeks ago.
Nice.
Which was really fun.
It was a lot of fun.
It was kind of crazy.
Yes, a lot of people that we've had on our show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were there.
Nice.
Yeah, it was.
It's
thank
funny.
You again for organizing that. People kept coming up to me and thanking me for organizing.
Well, you were a host.
And I was like, Richard Suzanne did everything. I just showed up.
Yeah.
So
it was fun. We are really probably going to do it again at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. I think every 3 or 4 years, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's great. I think it's fantastic.
I should check that out. I've actually never ridden a horse before, so it's...
We don't do much horseback riding anymore.
Okay.
We do only have 3 horses, but yeah, so.
Nice.
And do I know correctly, did you work at Wizards for a while, too?
No.
No, I thought you...
yeah.
For some reason,
I haven't actually. I've just, like, been adjacent to... I feel like I'm surrounded by and keep, like, meeting more people in the from Wizards.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
And Wizards adjacent.
Wizards adjacent. We hang out here.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
fun, though. There's some great Wizards adjacent people.
So. Yeah?
Yeah.
I aspire to be one.
Fantastic. You are.
People you're, in the sphere.
Yes, it is. I mean, it's pretty amazing, you know, when people say, well, what's your background? Well... Have you ever heard of this game company called Wizards of the Coast? Yes.
Mm.
I mean, when you're from the Seattle area, when you're able to say that,
right.
it's pretty special.
Hey, thank you, Rich.
Thanks, Peter.
I hope you enjoyed today's classic episode of Fireside with Peter Adkisson. If you want to catch the show live, be sure to tune in every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific on twitch.tv/GenConTV. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to stay up to date on all the Fireside podcast happenings. We will be back every Monday with classic episodes of Fireside covering the history of Magic the Gathering, and every Friday with new episodes of Fireside Dungeons & Dragons. Again, I've been Marcus from Gen Con TV. Thank you for listening, and we will see you soon.